Hey there, retro gaming fans. Get ready to power up your nostalgia as we take a deep dive into the world of Ed Fries.
We're talking about the man who went from programming on an Atari 800 to leading Microsoft's gaming division during the rise of the Xbox. Talk about a level-up story.
It's wild to think how one person's journey can intersect with so many iconic moments in gaming history. Now, this deep dive is based on an interview Ed Fries did at a gaming expo. And he didn't hold back. He talks about everything from his early days as a programmer to the challenges and triumphs of building a gaming empire.
And trust me, you'll gain a whole new appreciation for the games that defined an era.
For sure. Okay, so the story starts in a way you might not expect with Ed slinging pizzas and coding on the side. We're talking early 80s here.
And not just any code. He creates this game called Froggy for the Atari 800, a game that would end up catching the eye of an actual game company.
I can only imagine being a teenager, making pizzas, and suddenly you've got game devs offering you a job. It's the kind of break that most young programmers dream of.
It really speaks to his passion and talent. But what's interesting is how this early experience might have influenced his later work at Microsoft.
That's what I was thinking. It's not the most obvious transition, going from game development to spreadsheets and word processors.
Right. He joins Microsoft in the mid-80s, working on the original Excel team, going head-to-head with the giant Lotus 1-2-3.
Which, for those who don't remember, was like the ultimate spreadsheet showdown back then.
Absolutely. And he's also a key player in the development of Word, taking on WordPerfect. These were the early days of the PC wars, and he was in the thick of it.
What I find fascinating is how that experience, battling for dominance in the software world, might have shaped his approach to the console market later on. Did any strategies or lessons learned carry over, you think?
It's hard to say for sure, but it's definitely an interesting parallel. Both situations involved fierce competition, tight deadlines, and the need to innovate. He had to learn how to navigate a rapidly changing landscape and anticipate the needs of consumers. Those are valuable skills in any industry, but especially in the tech world.
Totally. So we've got Ed at Microsoft, honing his skills in this intense, high-pressure environment. But remember, that gaming bug never really goes away, does it?
Not for a true gamer at heart. Fast forward to the late 90s, and Microsoft's gaming division is, well, it's not exactly setting the world on fire. They had a flight simulator, which was iconic in its own right, but not exactly a console killer.
And that's where Ed sees an opportunity. He makes this bold, almost crazy move. He decides to lead this fledgling gaming division.
Which, to many at the time, seemed like career suicide. Microsoft was a titan in the PC world, but a nobody in the console market. They were going up against established giants like Sony and Nintendo. It was uncharted territory.
And he really had his work cut out for him. Think about it. How do you convince a company known for spreadsheets and word processors to take on the likes of PlayStation and Nintendo 64?
It wasn't easy. He had two vice presidents practically begging him not to take the job, convinced it would be a disaster.
Wow. That's some serious pressure. But he had a vision, and I guess he's not one to back down from a challenge. So tell me, what were those early days like? What were the first steps in building what would become the Xbox empire?
It's all about laying the groundwork. One of his first big wins was securing the deal for Age of Empires. Remember that classic, right?
Of course. It became a massive hit.
Exactly. And it showed that Microsoft could play in the big leagues of PC gaming. But Ed knew he needed more than just one hit. He needed to build a team, a network of talented developers who could bring his vision to life.
And that's when he starts assembling his dream team. I mean, we're talking industry legends here.
Yeah.
Chris Roberts, the mastermind behind Wing Commander. Jordan Wiseman, the creator of MechWarrior. He was pulling in some serious talent.
And it wasn't just about their resumes. It was about their passion, their understanding of what made games great. Ed knew he couldn't do this alone. He needed people who shared his love for gaming and his ambition to create something truly special.
So he's got the talent, he's got the drives, but the big question remains. How do you actually compete in the cutthroat world of consoles? Microsoft didn't have decades of experience like Sony or Nintendo.
That's where the direct Xbox concept comes into play. This is where things get really interesting.
Okay, I can already feel the excitement building. Tell us more about this direct Xbox. What was it all about, and why was it considered such a radical idea?
Imagine a gaming PC disguised as a console. Remember, this is the late 90s. PC gaming was booming, but consoles were a different beast altogether.
And Microsoft had a major advantage in the PC world with DirectX.
Exactly. DirectX was this groundbreaking technology that revolutionized PC gaming, making it faster, more powerful, and visually stunning. The Direct Xbox aimed to leverage that same technology, bringing that PC-like experience to the console market.
So they wanted to take what they knew best, PC gaming, and shake up the console world with it.
It was a bold strategy, for sure. They were essentially betting on the future of PC technology, believing that it would eventually dominate the console space as well.
And let's not forget, this was a time when consoles were all about proprietary hardware and closed ecosystems.
You're right. Microsoft came in with this idea of a more open platform, something that PC gamers were accustomed to. It was a huge gamble.
And like any good gamble, it came with its fair share of risks and tough decisions. I mean, developing a console from scratch is no easy feat, even when you're Microsoft.
Absolutely. They faced constant challenges, both technical and strategic. Like, remember the whole debate about including a DVD drive?
Oh, yeah. It seems crazy now, but DVD playback was a huge selling point for consoles back then.
It was a must-have feature. But including a DVD drive meant paying licensing fees for every single console?
Which, for a company trying to keep costs down, was a major concern.
Exactly. They ended up going with a separate dongle for DVD playback on the original Xbox, which, in hindsight, seems like a bit of a clunky workaround.
It's a good reminder that even the most iconic tech products have these weird quirks and compromises behind the scenes. But the DVD drive wasn't the only design decision that sparked debate, right?
Oh, not even close. The decision to include a hard drive was another big one. Remember, this was practically unheard of in consoles at the time.
It's standard now, but back then it was a radical idea.
Yeah.
Why do you think Ed was so adamant about the hard drive?
He was convinced that it would be a game changer, and he was right. He saw the potential for larger games, downloadable content, and eventually a more robust online gaming experience.
So he was already thinking about Xbox Live in those early days.
Absolutely. He was envisioning a future where consoles could connect seamlessly to the internet, allowing players to download games, play with friends, and access a whole world of content.
Talk about being ahead of the curve. But even with all the planning and innovation, they still had to win over skeptical gamers and a tough gaming press.
That's where Halo comes in.
Yes. The game that would define a generation of console shooters.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, even I'm curious about those early days. What was the initial reaction to Halo within Microsoft?
It's funny you should ask that. You see, even within Microsoft, there were doubts about Halo. The game looked and felt different from anything else on the market. Some thought it was too PC-like for console gamers.
They even had that anecdote about the console colors, right?
Yeah.
Someone did an analysis claiming that Halo's color palette was all wrong for consoles.
It's hard to believe now, looking back at how iconic Halo's visuals became, but it just goes to show how much Microsoft was still learning about the console market and its unique sensibilities.
It must have been a crash course in understanding the expectations of console players. So, how did they go from those early doubts to Halo becoming the killer app for the Xbox?
It was a combination of factors. Firstly, the game was simply phenomenal. It had this addictive gameplay loop, stunning graphics for the time, and a compelling story that drew players in.
And the multiplayer. Let's not forget how Halo revolutionized console multiplayer gaming.
Absolutely. It became the go-to game for couch co-op and online battles. But it wasn't just the game itself, it was the way Microsoft marketed it. They knew they needed to create a buzz to convince gamers that the Xbox was more than just a PC in disguise.
So how do they do it? How do they win over those skeptical gamers and critics?
They went all out at E3. The Halo demo blew everyone away. They showcased the game's stunning graphics, innovative gameplay, and cinematic presentation. It was a game changer.
And the rest, as they say, is history. Halo became a cultural phenomenon, propelling the Xbox to the forefront of the console wars. It solidified Microsoft's place as a major player in the gaming industry.
And it all started with Ed Frye's vision and his unwavering belief in the Xbox and the team behind it. But even legends move on eventually. After years of pouring his heart and soul into the Xbox, he decided it was time for a change.
That's right. He left Microsoft in 2004, right after the Xbox had become this massive success. It must have been a difficult decision after all that he had poured into it.
It was. He's talked about how much he valued the freedom and agility of those early days, being able to take risks and make decisions quickly.
Which makes sense. The bigger a company gets, the harder it can be to maintain that startup mentality.
Yeah.
So what did Ed do after leaving the corporate world? Did he finally slow down and take that well-deserved break?
Not a chance. If anything, he seems even more energized. He's been involved in various projects, advising startups, and even founding his own 3D printing company.
Which makes perfect sense, given his passion for technology and innovation. But here's where things get really interesting for me, at least from a retro gaming perspective. Ed decides to create a brand new game for a console released in 1977, the Atari 2600.
And not just any game, he decided to create Halo 2600. It's incredible, really. He went all in, embracing the limitations of the Atari 2600 hardware, even limiting himself to using only 4 kilobytes of memory.
That's dedication. Right. Most developers would shy away from those kinds of limitations, but he saw it as a creative challenge.
Exactly. And that's what makes this story so compelling. It's a testament to his enduring passion for gaming, his respect for those early pioneers, and his willingness to push creative boundaries.
It really makes you appreciate the creativity and ingenuity of those early game developers, you know, what they were working with.
Absolutely. Yeah. To do that with such limited hardware.
It's amazing.
They had to think outside the box. Really, really come up with creative ways to make these compelling experiences.
And for Ed to come back to that world after working on cutting-edge technology like the Xbox,
right?
It says something.
It really does.
It says a lot about him.
It speaks volumes about his love for gaming, you know, and those early pioneers of the industry.
It does make you wonder, though, what he thinks about gaming today.
You know, from what I've read, he's generally pretty optimistic about where the industry's headed.
Oh, yeah.
He's really excited about the indie game development scene, yeah. All the incredible games that are coming out from these smaller studios.
It really does feel like we're in a golden age.
Absolutely.
For indie games. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And he sees that as a direct result of game development tools becoming more accessible to everyone, right? It's not just about the big studios with the big budgets anymore.
Right. And you really get that sense of, like you said, that innovation.
Yeah.
And that diversity of voices.
Yeah. You get those fresh perspectives.
Yeah, for sure. But he must acknowledge the challenges, too.
Of course. Yeah.
Especially with AAA game development.
Yeah. The cost of game development just keeps going up.
It's crazy.
And it can stifle some of that creativity, right? Because when you're spending that much money, you need to make sure it's a surefire hit. So you end up with a lot of sequels and reboots.
Yeah, that's
the straight off.
It is a double-edged sword.
Definitely. Well, I have to ask before we wrap up, what does Ed think will be retro gaming in the future? Well, you know, he actually joked that for him, if he bought the game new for his kids, then it couldn't be retro.
That's great.
But I think on a more serious note,
yeah,
he believes that the games that will really stand the test of time are the ones that offer something unique and special. You know, whether that's groundbreaking gameplay or a really compelling story or an unforgettable world.
The games that kind of stay with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really capture your imagination.
Exactly. And those are the games that are going to be discovered and rediscovered by new generations of players.
That's awesome. Well, whether you're firing up your favorite console this weekend,
yeah,
you know, that old retro console, or you're diving into a brand new release,
yeah,
take a moment to think about, you know, how far we've come from those early days of gaming.
Oh, yeah.
With those pixelated graphics.
Yeah.
To the immersive, you know, experiences that we have today.
Absolutely. And it makes you wonder, right?
Yeah.
What incredible worlds are waiting for us just around the corner.
The future of gaming is bright.
Absolutely it is.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll catch you on the next Deep Dive.
See you next time.